Kaya, Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew Pierce, and this is a podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Chad Friedrichs is a documentarian who has crafted a filmography built with a series of fringe stories that unveil fascinating narratives that exist just outside the periphery of normalcy. His first feature doc, Jandak on Corwood, sees a reclusive folk and blues musician gaining a following. All the while, he never truly engages with his followers' fascination with his work. In 2011, Chad crafted the ethnographic documentary The Pruitt-Igoe Method, which looks at the urban racism that existed in social housing in St. Louis. Then in 2017, with The Experimental City, Chad explores the rise and fall of societal ideas as witnessed with the Minnesota Experimental City, a grand vision that was never truly realised. Each of these stories have paved way for his latest film, The Cinema Within, an exploration into the way editing works. Chad explores the language of cinema with Walter Murch, whose book In the Blink of an Eye equally explores the role blinking plays in editing, and also scholar David Bordwell, who explores the impact of an edit on our psyche and tries to understand the way it transforms our understanding of cinema. Murch and Bordwell play scene setters for the deeper narrative in The Cinema Within, which sees researcher Sermon Ildara head to rural Turkey to find a group of people who have never seen a film before, creating the foundation to her research into the role of editing, perspective, and more on our minds. The Cinema Within is a fascinating look into the impacts of editing and the notion of taking the language of cinema for granted. Like every language, it's one that needs to be learned and built on over time, and Chad's work invites the perspective of cinema. His films are invitations to see the world from a different perspective, and it's that notion that we explore in the following interview, which sees Chad talk about the notion of ideas, while I bring up my personal connection to Jandak on Corwood, a film that I saw back in 2004 at Perth's Revelation Film Festival, and it's one that has stuck with me ever since then. The Cinema Within is now available to view on DVD, Amazon, Apple TV, and Canopy in America, with a wider release, no doubt, to follow. If you want to find out more about the work that we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au or follow us on Instagram, Facebook and Blue Sky at thecurb.au. We are a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on support of listeners and readers just like yourself. So if you can, visit patreon.com/thecurb.au where you can support our work from as little as $1 a month. And if you're unable to financially support us, that's okay. Please consider sharing this interview with your film-loving friends. We'd also love it if you could rate and review us on the podcast player of your choice. Every review helps amplify the interviews and stories from filmmakers to a wider audience. Here's the trailer for The Cinema Within, followed by my interview with Chad Friedrichs.
What you're looking at is a violent disruption of physical reality. You know, instantaneously, one picture is replaced by another. So the mysterious fact is that edits work. It could have been otherwise 100 years ago. We could have invented film, tried to splice, and maybe the human mind would reject it.
And the idea of motion pictures would have died at that point.
But a few years into the 20th century, filmmakers realized that actually, you know, I can cut. Viewers perfectly understand it. From that moment, cinema took off.
And pretty early on in the game, it became clear many of these edits are totally invisible to people. It's very weird that that would work out.
How's Japan going at the moment?
Oh, it's lovely. It's one of our favorite spots.
Yeah.
In all the world. Yeah. Yeah. It's just so unique, you know? It's like unlike any other place, even like countries around it. It just seems so different. We're here for the, they have an expo, mm-hmm. a world expo in Osaka. And so we're in Osaka right now. And let's see, we got our tickets for about a week from today. And yeah, that's going to be something. I think we're going to actually go to the Australian exhibit.
Oh, nice.
At the expo. Yeah, it looks pretty cool.
So what are they, what kind of expo? Just like the old World Fair kind of things that they used to do? Is it that kind of thing?
That's what they call, what they used to call World's Fair is what they call World Expo now, and they do them every 5 years. And so it used to be, I'm not sure it was so regimented before, but I think now, you know, maybe less interest or whatever. They do them every 5 years. The last one was in UAE in 2020, which they had to postpone because of COVID. We had planned to be there as well. I'd never been to, I still haven't been to one. And so this is going to be my first time doing it. And then the next one will be in Saudi. And so, yeah, like this is, yeah, it's going to be very cool. And I would,
but it's a ground for ideas as well. And that would be the most exciting part of it, of just getting to see what nations are coming up with and how they intend or they envision the change of the world to take place. Is that the kind of thing that interests you about them?
I think so. Yeah. So when I was working on Experimental City, I did a lot of, I used a lot of footage from the World's Fairs from times past as a kind of optimistic vision of what the future would be like. And so, yeah, I'm, you know, generally a kind of optimist and I'm at least to a certain degree technologically engaged. And so, you know, the idea of finding, you know, more efficient, better solutions has always been appealing to me. So I think, yeah, at its heart, that's probably what, you know, kind of drove me to kind of witness a World's Fair on my own.
And maybe there might be a documentary out of it as well.
You know, you never know. You never know. Certainly good visuals. I mean, there's no doubt it's good visuals. The question whether the ideas like kind of merit a documentary, but you never know.
All right, let's start kind of sliding into to talking about your work then, because that's actually a really, really great launching point of what does warrant time being spent on it to be, you know, explored in a documentary format. Your films are so fascinating because they kind of, you're exposing hidden things in ways, in really fascinating ways. But yeah, I guess on a fundamental level, what do you, how do you determine what is a good subject to make a film out of?
I mean, I think, you know, the thing that draws me in, so the thing that kind of like acts as the lure for me is that big idea, you know, whether I can connect this to something that is resonant to me. So I'm not looking for kind of a present day relevance typically. In fact, I think a lot of my films, I think if there's a kind of critique, it's like, well, what, you know, who cares? But, you know, I care about these ideas. And so I think that's probably the initial thing that kind of captures my attention is the kind of bigger, you know, kind of headline idea behind it. Now, sometimes that headline idea will be totally wrong. So with something like Pruitt-Igoe Myth, you know, I went into that film assuming that I would make a documentary about architecture and about design and about its impact on people's lives and about on society, because that was the kind of explanation for what went wrong in Pruitt-Igoe when I was researching it. And so, you know, I came to find out something very different, but that's the initial idea. And then, you know, as I'm kind of starting to think, okay, well, how could this actually work as a project? How could I actually string this out into some sort of, you know, narrative, or if nothing else, at least a kind of compelling set of vignettes. And, you know, I'm looking at the visuals at that point, thinking, is this a podcast? You know, so oftentimes the way I make a film is like, I make it almost like a podcast where I like make the audio track and, you know, like kind of fill it out. And then the question becomes, especially with something like Jandek on Corwood, like how on earth do you fill all this time with visuals? And so that's always been a struggle to a certain degree. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I think I'm really drawn to archival. Because of the stories that I tell, I think archival suits those kind of stories very well. And so, you know, like over the course of my career, I've even had like a huge 16 millimeter collection. I don't now anymore. I got rid of it because we travel all the time now. But you know, I collected, bought on eBay 16 millimeter films just as a way of kind of cannibalizing those to incorporate them into my project. So that's the next phase. But the initial phase and long-winded answer to your question is it's the idea first.
Like as I was going through and kind of revisiting some of your work, whether it's via memories or actually watching it, the notion of creativity and how you explore creativity from a way that creativity impacts our present and our future and our state of mind as well. And I think of Jandak on Corwood, which is the first film of yours that I ever saw, and how that's lingered in my mind ever since I saw it back in 2004. And I haven't seen it again since then, right? Yeah. But I think about it so often. And it's because of the creativity that you're exploring in there. And then, of course, the creativity you're saying, like with Pruitt-Igoe, you're going into there thinking that you're going to be exploring architecture and you're getting something else. Experimental city is something else too. And then obviously Cinema Within is editing and how that changes our mind perspective. So this digestion of creativity is fascinating. I guess expanding on what we just talked about, your interest in exploration of different styles of human creativity, what draws you to that?
I don't know. It's not the thing that I'm looking for.
Sure.
I think that makes sense. The idea of, certainly with experimental city, the idea of problem solving, or with the idea of, I have another film that's never been seen by, it's only been seen by several dozen people in this world. And it's one of my favorites, but it never got out there. Never really devoted the time to it. And it's about the history of science. Certainly the science of behind filmmaking was something that I was drawn to. So I think that, those kinds of aspects of human thought that are exploring, how the world works, kind of analyzing, kind of makes things that we kind of take for granted work. For instance, city development, in the case of experimental city, or, editing, something that most people don't even notice, but is that's so fundamental to, filmmaking, those kinds of questions about, how we uncover those kind of hidden truths, I think are things that, like a mystery, I'm really into the idea of a mystery and kind of unpacking that mystery in a kind of intellectual, but also kind of narratively engaging way.
I think that's what I really appreciate about Cinema Within, is that you're proposing a question which we so often might think about subconsciously, but don't have the answer to, which is we take the form of cinema and filmmaking almost for granted now because it's been around longer than most of us have been alive. And it's a bit of a miracle, right? It is this form of storytelling and narrative structure that we just kind of, again, take for granted. And so how do you then approach somebody who's never experienced a film and the way that we watch movies and understand storytelling and things like that? I was so fascinated by that because you're answering a question that almost can't be answered, right? Which is who has never seen a film before? And that kind of rabbit hole is really, really fascinating. But again, I think that's what I really appreciate about your work, is that you are asking these questions which aren't really asked all that often, or at least consciously thought of, and then seeing it out to a logical conclusion. Let's talk about the Cinema Within with that mindset then, building that, exploring that mindset of how do we find somebody who's not actually seen a movie before? Like, I know that's one aspect and one layer of the film, but it's a pretty pivotal one too.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, the film didn't start like that. So like all my projects, they evolve over time. The initial question had to do, which is a related question, no doubt, that those experiments are actually trying to answer, which is why this kind of form of film editing has been so pervasive for so long. And why is it that people kind of immediately understand it? So much so that they not only understand it, but it's like invisible to them. they literally don't notice it. And, I came up with this kind of question while I was teaching filmmaking. So I was teaching editing class at the same time as I was teaching a kind of film history and appreciation class. And that kind of question seemed very profound to me. The fact that we don't notice edits when it's done well, it's designed that way. That's one of the reasons why it, works so well. And so, I kind of said at that point, I'm going to make a film on this topic of why continuity editing has been so pervasive, with an idea of kind of educating a general populace about editing, because, most people, again, don't notice editing. And so, I felt that there was something that people could learn about films here that I could actually teach them. And so, eventually, so initially the project was to be kind of a four-part project. So it was going to have different segments, and I would have this merch section, which, once we got in contact with him, I, was fascinated, and, he's a compelling figure for sure. Very intellectual. I was going to have a David Bordwell section where he talked about the entire history of this thing, as well as going into cognitive film theory, which is kind of this is the discipline in which this idea is kind of rooted. And then I would have the kind of psychologists talking about their piece, and then I would have Sermon Ildarar talking about the and demonstrating the footage from the Turkish viewers who had never seen movies before. But over time, what happened was Sermon's story just kind of took over the whole film. It had, and this is one of the cases where, like, again, you kind of the footage leads you in certain directions. There's kind of certain natural ways that things that you're interested in, and natural ways to kind of structure a story. And Sermon's had that kind of arc of understanding in it, of discovery. And it had twists and turns in her understanding. And so, eventually that kind of came to dominate with Murch as a kind of secondary story within that, and everybody else kind of falling into place within that broader story.
One of the books that sits right next to me is, his book is so phenomenal. And then in my other room, seeing David Bordwell on screen, I've got a bunch of his books too. And so getting to hear these people talk about their art form and talk about how they see it and engage with it and know how it changes people's minds and changes our perspectives is a pretty major thing. When you approached Walter, when you approached David to with the project, what was their initial reaction to say yes, no?
Well, I think I just crafted a, reasonable pitch, tried to make it as interesting as possible to them that aligned with their interests. And so, I think it was kind of perceived, my suspicion is that it was kind of perceived as a let's help this guy out. He's doing something reasonably interesting, and so it's worth a few hours to sit down. But they were extraordinarily generous with their times. I think David went, I mean, he was suffering from allergies that day, and so his voice started to run out of steam. And Walter, he did 3.5 hours, I think, though. And Walter gave us 4 hours, and was very lively and engaging throughout the entire course of it. So yeah, it was really cool because, like, these are kind of intellectual heroes, and so the it's one of those things that you realize how very fortunate you are to be making documentaries, to meet people who you've always admired and respected for their work or their intellectual output. And so yeah, it was a cool experience.
Yeah. Again, like their impact is phenomenal, but also how they see versions of truth, right? And that's kind of one of the other things that you play around with in the film too, is noting how editing creates its own creation and version of truth. And that's also what documentary filmmaking is. Documentary filmmaking is not explicitly the truth, but it's your version of the truth. And expanding on that idea, what does the truth mean to you as a documentary filmmaker and being able to explore it on this level in, as you do in Cinema Within?
Yeah. I mean, I've always felt that, that's the real strength of documentaries. The one of the reasons why people like documentaries is because it is grounded in facts and the orchestration of those facts in a way that makes it a kind of compelling form of somewhat individual truth. But my films, I like to, I mean, certainly they suggest my perspective, some more or less so. But I'm always about trying to, number one, like, make my subjects look good. I don't think they get into a film project like this to, look ridiculous. And so I'm trying to, polish up the interview as much as possible, make them appear in a flattering, or at least, realistic way for how they behave. And so, but then in terms of the subject, I believe in a kind of foundational truth that underlies our reality. I'm not one to, think of like everybody's perspective is equally valid. I think there are more or less valid perspectives based on how, those align with a kind of certain fundamental truths. And so, I feel beholden to, as best as possible to try to get to the bottom of what, I'm perceiving as the truth, which hopefully is informed by, facts and data and, all those things. So that's what kind of, drives me in it. I don't want to misrepresent, either that individual that, gives me their time and, their trust. But I also don't want to misrepresent the subject. And so, that to me is what makes documentaries popular. And the more that gets eroded, I feel that that is problematic, not only for the form, but also for society as well.
Part of the reason why I ask is the editing scenes where you're talking about these aren't Walter's hands, this is, that kind of stuff, and this is a different person. And I love that because you're expanding on the notion of it, and you're saying, while these aren't his hands, while this isn't the person sitting here, this is still Walter at work. So it is still the truth. It's just not the truth as you might understand it. And that's effectively what editing is too, is it's shaping a narrative in a way that makes us as the audience understand it. I find that so fascinating because again, it's the layers of what you're presenting in it. And like you, I've been so fascinated by the impact of editing on us as an audience and how this notion of blinking is its own form of editing too. And again, that's another form of truth. That notion of like presenting a form of truth and just saying, what you're saying isn't true, but it is true.
No. I mean I completely agree. I think the thing with editing is the illusion is so complete and so believable, and so I knew. So like that's if you make a film about film editing, number one, like you're gonna have the problem of like people like constantly analyzing your film's editing, people who are familiar with it. So there's that trap. It's a trap, right? It's a total trap. But then also, the idea, like if you're using these ed if you're doing these edits that you're talking about, many of them will appear people will be completely oblivious to it. The story will just flow and they won't notice them. And so like you have the problem of how do you get people to notice the edits? Especially when you're doing something like a recreation of Walter Murch kind of speaking while he's editing. If you don't point that out to people, then they're just going to assume that that is a continuous reality that, was, captured by the camera. And that's not how films work. And so my feeling was like, why not go ahead and show that within the documentary itself as well? Show the constructed nature of it, because the illusion is so complete. And so you have to kind of suck people out of that illusion. There are all sorts of kind of techniques that I was trying throughout the film to kind of make the edits more apparent. So one trick is, of course, to like put music beats right on the edit, right? That kind of draws the attention to it. Another is to have like the audio change whenever the edit takes place. You do a subtle shift in the ambiance or whatever, and people notice that edit because you don't have that kind of bridge of continuous audio underneath that edit. And so, I used all sorts of techniques to kind of make these edits a little bit more explicit. At times I would dial it up, at times I would dial it down to kind of show again how illusory this can actually be. But yeah, that's, something I was very aware of. And so that I think informs the kind of style of the film in many ways, was to kind of like make the film feel as both fluid and constructed as possible at various points.
You've been working, making films for decades now. You teach film. What changed your perception about filmmaking, having made Cinema Within?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm that introspective to be able to
Yeah.
give you a proper answer there. Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, I just go from one project to the next, and I'm constantly looking for like new things to kind of get into. I get very bored very easily, and so I need to kind of, fill that gap with, fill that gap with work and labor. How did I change with Cinema Within? Give me a second to dwell on that. I think so. Here's the way. Here's a way in which I think it broadened my appreciation in certain directions, and I think that that's a good takeaway that one can have from making a film. It really made me appreciate how thoughtful craftspeople being attentive to not only their response, but their audience response, both of them, how they're responding to the work that they're creating, as well as how the audience is responding, can really begin to shape something that is profound and, in some cases, kind of natural. You know, that was the big takeaway for me in this film. If I was looking for like a kind of theme for the film, it's how people can arrive at these kinds of solutions just by being attentive to us without any kind of preconceived kind of philosophy or theory about how it's working. So that sounds kind of abstract, and so all kind of like grounded in something. So, you know, just looking at filmmakers from, say, the 1910s and thinking about how they arrived at something that was so just ended up being so universal. You know, universally accepted throughout the world. And they arrived at that simply by kind of looking at what worked and what didn't. And, you know, I think of like Walter Murch, like noticing, you know, these kinds of things that he was doing, and he wasn't even aware consciously of what he was doing. And then eventually, like arriving at this kind of understanding of what blinks mean on a kind of deeper level that is subsequently confirmed by research from an actual blink researcher. That shows me that like an artist who's like, or anybody, you know, it doesn't have to be a professional artist, but anybody who's kind of like doing their work in a kind of thoughtful way and really thinking about that can arrive at a conclusion that is very deep and profound. I think that was the way. And so like now when I think about myself working, I'm maybe a little bit more likely to kind of trust my gut in a way. I have enough, I guess, experience now being 20 some odd years into this that, you know, if those filmmakers in the 19 teens can arrive at the continuity system just by kind of trusting themselves and thinking it through, and trusting their audience, then maybe I can kind of trust myself a little bit more as well. And so I'm trying to learn how to do that a little bit more.
Putting you on the spot as well, like you talk about not being introspective, which is interesting. Like you are engaging with an external notion of stories and things like that, so you are putting yourself into other stories by telling them. But with that in mind, like, do you consider a body of work? Do you look at what you're doing as like another chapter in you know, a book of the world, in your Chad's perspective of the world.
I you know, like my films are so diverse in terms of topic that it's very difficult for me to, and I, you know, I like I say, I kind of my mind kind of moves on from one project to the next, and so like a sequel is always kind of a tough proposition. Not that I wouldn't love doing them in some cases, but you know, a follow-up in the same kind of territory. So do I view it as like an overall project of like this kind of master story that's all linked together somehow? No, I don't. I view it as kind of me kind of pursuing what interests me at the time. And so, you know, that will range very broadly. I have, you know, like three or four other topics right now that I'm kind of mulling over, and each of them is very different. It makes it hard because in many ways, like, you know, the kind of reservoir of footage that is available for a particular topic, it would be nice to be able to pull from that reservoir for a different project, you know, instead of like going and finding a new reservoir each time. And the body of research one has to do, you know, each time is new and different instead of kind of specializing. And so it becomes like from a just a time perspective, it becomes a little bit draining. And yet at the same time, it is invigorating doing that research, and it's awesome to find those new pools of footage that might be available. But no, I don't view it as a as a kind of like an overall meta project. I view it as just like I want to produce more. I really do. I want to produce more. I want to have this thing, but I'm not trying to kind of make it cohesive.
Yeah. I completely understand. Part of the reason why I ask is, like, again, I you know, what drew me to wanting to be able to talk with you is the notion of reflecting on, you know, for me, it's, yeah, 20, I think it was 2004, I saw Jane Duncan Callwood at Revelation here in Perth. And that's a film that has stuck with me because of the notion of just somebody putting out something creative and just leaving it there and then kind of, they don't know who their audience is, right?
Yeah.
And their engagement with the world is such an ephemeral one because they create something, they put it there, and then if somebody discovers it, great. But I think about that a lot because, you know, on a really macro level, it's like when you're running a website or you're running something to do with film reviews or anything, any kind of perspective, you're always going after that audience reach. Right. I've got to get more audience. And then I always pull myself back and I'm like, yeah, but he didn't. Right. He was quite happy with just doing what he did. And so I draw myself back to this perspective of it's okay if you only have one person listening or one person paying attention. And I think about that film so often because of that notion of how people, creative people, engage with the world. Right. Because it's you think about like all these discussions about the box office of this and all this kind of stuff. And it always, you know, sometimes will flow down to that. But it's like, no. I just want to be able to create something. If somebody engages with it, great. If they don't, so be it.
Yeah.
And that I think is really quite profound. It's quite important. Yeah.
Yeah, you really teased out, like, I'd never really considered that with Jan de Concord, but you're right. Yeah, I always think of that movie as being more about the fans than about Jandek himself, you know, about this kind of body of, you know, people who are interested in outsider music and who created this kind of mythology. But you're right. Yeah, Jandek over time created this kind of singular body of work, and that's what drew people in. So you have to have that initially. For that kind of fan base to start speculating and doing what it did. So yeah, that resonates with me a lot because, you know, my films aren't, with, you know, a couple of exceptions, my films aren't necessarily, they're certainly not commercially driven. I don't make them. That's not the thing that, you know, kind of drives me. The thing that drives me is just like doing it. I just like making it. I like solving the problems and I like doing it. And I rarely think about the kind of commercial aspect of it. At the same time, that makes sustainability very difficult because it's an expensive art form. I'm trying to, you know, find ways to cut costs in the making of them, but it's time consuming and it's expensive and all these things. And so it's a kind of constant kind of push pull. But, you know, thus far I still go, you know, with my heart in terms of like the selection of projects. I'm not usually too concerned about the, commercial, viability or whether there's going to be people interested. I just always assume if I'm interested in it, the other people will be interested in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. Right. It makes sense to me. Yeah. And whether there's like, you know, 5, 1,000,
yeah,
a million, like there's going to be one person out there who was also interested in something that you're interested in. And to me, that's like, I think it's the personal level of setting of going, is that enough? Is one person enough or is a million people enough? And you can only answer that for yourself, but, and you don't have to expand on that, but it's just the notion of like connecting with an audience. And going, hey, look at this cool thing I found. Look at this interesting story I found.
Yeah.
And I mean, on a personal level, it's what I've really appreciated. Perth's Revelation Film Festival has been around for over 20 years. Two of your films have screened there. I saw them both at the festival. And it's just like this transportation to a different place, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really enjoyable. And it's lovely to be able to just go, ah, cool. No worries. I'm getting taken somewhere else. And especially like in the years that I saw Jandek and Experimental City there, I was seeing 5, 6 films a day. And so you have this relationship of this conversation between films and often I'm traveling between Perth down to Fremantle, and it's just like, and then my relationship with my city, having these stories in my mind, and just especially with the experimental city, is just this idea of, okay, how do you change a place, right? You know, what does it look like when you actually change something and have a vision to make something different? And around the time that that film came out, we had some people here in Perth, some architects who were like, we're going to do these great science projects and build these great science buildings and everything. And in my mind, like, after watching the film, oh, they're not going to be able to do that. It's just not possible. So it's this relationship of film to us, film and place, and then film and festival as well, like this notion of the safety of going somewhere and knowing that you're going to be taken somewhere else and having your worldview just shift a little bit.
Yeah, no, we have a great film festival where I'm from in Columbia, Missouri, called the True False Documentary Film Festival.
Oh, nice. That's a cool name.
Yeah, it was, and they started it. Jandek and Corwood played there back in 2003 when they first, or 2004 when they first started. It was the same kind of experience for me where, like, at its peak, I don't go anymore because we're usually abroad whenever it's going on. But at its peak when we were going, it was like, you know, like I could probably handle 4 films a day. I couldn't, you know, 3 most days actually.
Yeah.
And like,
I can't do it now. Yeah.
but yeah, you're right. Just the way that the creative works interact with each other, throughout. And sometimes a film will just shut you down. Like, I mean, I remember seeing, Act of Killing, and I had 2 other films on my slate for that afternoon. I just said, I can't do it anymore. You know, it's just like, I'm done. I know the feeling of the interaction of films in your head, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious then, the engagement with Revelation, like, again, it's been two films of yours that have screened there. What's that been like? Screening at you know, Perth is such a remote place. What is that notion of being able to share your stories with a remote place?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've never been to Perth. Australia is very high on our list to visit for sure, never been. And honestly, when we first got into Perth with Jandek, which I don't even remember, I'm sure I didn't even know where Perth was. Like, I knew it was in Australia, yeah. But he certainly didn't know that it was, you know, like on the other side from Sydney and Melbourne, et cetera. And so, you know, from what I understand, it's a very idiosyncratic festival. That's, you know, kind of been my understanding of it. And so the programming is very kind of curated for this kind of very interesting kind of films that really speak on different levels. And so the idea that, like, my films have played there twice now, that's really, I guess, reassuring in a way. It acts as a kind of validation of it. Even the idea that you're sitting here talking to me right now in 2025, that's 21 years from when I made Jandek, or, you know, I guess 23 years from the time that I made Jandek on Corwood. That's amazing to me. You know, the idea that it persists, and that it did persist. That was my first film. And I made that for like $3,500. It was like, you know, like, I was just wanted to make a film, because I had a deadline to meet, and I said I was going to do this by my 25th birthday or 26th birthday. And so, you know, the idea that we're still talking about that and that it persists beyond that, that is absolutely amazing to me. And so the idea that, you know, my films sometimes play in other parts of the world, like, people are interested in Pruitt-Igoe in Brazil. It's a very American story. And yet, like, the idea that it plays in all of these other places, despite that, it's kind of flabbergasting to me. And it's again a great kind of honor, but especially like with such a film festival such as, with such idiosyncratic tastes as Perth, that's pretty awesome that, like, you know, the films are, you know, getting out to audiences that are interested in that kind of film. You know, if you would have told 25-year-old filmmaker Chad that, you know, his films are playing these kinds of places and people are remembering them 24 years later and think about them like semi-routinely, like, that's all you can ask. That's all I could ask.
Well, it's the persistence of storytelling, right? And the form of storytelling, which again comes back to Cinema Within. But then, you know, as we lead to wrapping up, the notion of that persistence and how it lingers with us. You mentioned there, like, you set yourself a goal to make a film by 25, was it?
Yeah. Orson Welles. Yeah. I said if Orson Welles could make, I when I was 16 years old, and I decided I wanted to be a filmmaker, 15, something like that. I was a teenager. And it's just one of those things you say, like, when you're 15 or 16, because it sounds cool. I think at the time, it just sounded cool. I'm going to be a filmmaker because I like movies. Everybody likes movies, right? And I've seen that process actually teaching. I've seen a lot of students come in and they love movies. They absolutely love, love, love movies so much. And yet the process of making a movie is so different from watching a movie. And I've seen the disillusion happen as well, you know. But I was one of those lucky ones that was kind of fortunate to actually enjoy it. You know, once I actually got in, I found the thing that I enjoyed, which was post-production mostly. I like the other aspects too, but post is where I really kind of specialize. And so, but, you know, when I was 14, 15, 16, somewhere in there, like, I just said, well, you know, if I'm going to do this, and I had done a little research on famous filmmakers, I said, if Orson Welles can make the greatest film of all time when he's 25, well, then I'll set myself a deadline. And it's stupid because, like, that 15, 16 year old didn't know anything about filmmaking. They didn't know anything about the process. They didn't know anything. And yet you're beholden to that. You know, like, you make yourself beholden to that, to the point where, like, eventually you do start making a film, you know more about the process of it, and you're like, I'm still beholden to, you know, 15, 16 year old me. But that's very powerful, you know, and that's a story that I told myself when I was 15 or 16, that you can achieve this, you know. And then that's why I made Jandek on Corwood. I don't know if I would have made that film had I not had that goal that was set, you know, 10 years earlier.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask if there was a particular film that made you drive that way, like, that, to have that mindset. But Orson Welles is a fairly, you know, fairly prominent person to be able to go, right, if he can do it, then so can I. And that's something, right? It's proof of concept to go, I know somebody else has done it, so therefore it's going to be okay if I do it. And it's going to be okay if I do it and I fail, right?
Yeah.
Like, that safety net of knowing that others have engaged with storytelling, engaged with filmmaking, and been okay, right, and continued on. I don't know if you want to expand on that, if there was a film or anything like that too. Yeah.
Well, certainly there's a film. Let me just go with it. I think I was, like, too blockheaded to consider that I would ever fail. You know what I mean? When you're young like that, you just don't even, it doesn't even register. You just, like, think I'm going to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, now, older wisdom, yeah, there's no way I would ever go into something like that. That's crazy, you know, like, it's almost impossible. But there was one film, definitely, and it actually ties into Cinema Within quite a bit. And that is JFK was the film that made me want to be a filmmaker. It was the one that I first realized that there was actually somebody making the film. And, you know, I heard of Steven Spielberg and, you know, watched the Oscars and so on, watch people, you know, win awards for making these things. But, like, it hadn't really kind of registered on a gut level that there's somebody actually shaping this thing in a kind of explicit way. And JFK, I mean, if you recall, like, that's a very explicit film. It shows all it seems, you know, it's constantly cutting between different you know, black and white and different film stocks. And, you know, like, the story is just, like, all over the place, cutting back and forth in time. And so there's no way anybody could watch that film and not recognize that it's a constructed piece. And so, you know, I've always attributed that to kind of awakening me to film, the fact that it does show, it seems, that its editing is very explicit. You know, it's one of the greatest edited films of all time, I think. I love that film, even though I don't subscribe to the conspiracy theory anymore. At the time, I was taken with it. The form of the film is the thing that made me want to be a filmmaker. And, you know, so then when it came time to make a project about editing, I don't know if I would have. I mean, I love editing. I absolutely adore editing. It's so fun. And I wanted to kind of share that with people, at least how kind of it works. But I I think JFK has constantly acted as a kind of resource for me going through my film to kind of make things both tell it as a great story, but also make it kind of like semi-explicit in the making of it, show your seams a little bit. And so, yeah, I adore that film. I mean, there's many films I adore, but I adore that film in part because of the profound impact it had on me when I was 15.
Well, I mean, that's it. Like, it's making the form of cinema explicit and reminding audiences that you are actually sitting there watching a piece of cinema. And I know that some filmmakers want people to forget that they're watching a film, that they're so immersed in it that they get swept up in it. And that's its own stylistic choice for sure. And some of those films I've flowed along with. But like you, I'm also really fascinated by the way that editors, directors, actors, whoever in the creative process is able to use the form of cinema to remind you that this is something different. You're watching something very unique, and it's a collaborative process, and we're putting it on screen, and we're encouraging you to see the world differently. And that's it. And it's like, you know, maybe films, not all films need you to see the world differently, but so many ones that actually linger and cause an impact, like JFK, like The Conversation, cause you to consider so much about the world, right? And or like Jandak on Corwood, for me, like that's something, again, I'm considering the impact of certain things in the world. And like, layers upon layers, you watch more and more films, and then suddenly your personality or your perspective is completely changed, right? And you become a shaped being by the films that we watched, where we watched them, who we watched them with, all these kinds of things. It's the power of filmmaking. And that's what I loved about Cinema Within, is that you're showing, you know, what filmmaking can do, but also communal watching. Is like the last thing I will talk about is the joy of getting to see an audience laughing and enjoying Charlie Chaplin. Like, that's beautiful. And it just goes to show that the language of cinema, it transcends everywhere. You know, it lingers anywhere. It's pretty magical, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think so. There's a difference between those. Not to kind of put a damper I think it's important to be kind of thorough here. I think there's a difference between those first time viewers in Turkey and, say, the first viewers of film. And I think one of the big differences is that those first-time viewers didn't have an understanding that they were going to be, number one, attempted to be entered. So let me flip it. When people first walked into the cinemas, it was promoted from the outside as an entertainment. And eventually it became a kind of substitute for vaudeville, where it was going to tell you a story, right? And so when those early film viewers were watching those films, they could interpret those cuts as kind of telling you a story, you know, whereas that's something that those first time viewers in Turkey lacked. There was no kind of preparation given to them. And so in a way that makes it a kind of better test of the kind of perceptual grounding of these things, because if you aren't told any sort of kind of context, then this gets down to like what you're actually perceiving. And you know, in some cases, they didn't link those shots together. Now, in terms of Charlie Chaplin, I suspect that, in fact, I know most of those people by that point had seen movies before. They'd seen it on TV and whatnot. And so I think what that screening did, not to spoil the film, but like what that screening did for those people was, I think a lot of those people had never had that communal film viewing experience. They may have watched films with other people, but not outside, you know, not on a big screen. They'd never gone to the big city, to the movie theaters or whatnot. And so I think it was a novel experience for them, just having that kind of common experience with a large group of people all kind of laughing together. I think that was something new. Now, a lot of those people in the audience had, you know, seen movies in the kind of format that we had seen, but like some hadn't. The older folks, I think this was something that was new. And that was really cool to like witness them kind of experience that, because I love going to the movies. I mean, a lot of people, I mean, everybody does, right? And I think that's one of the like deeply kind of sad things about trends in I mean, this is common, you know, this kind of complaint. But, you know, it still doesn't make it not real. You know, like I hope we don't lose that common experience of watching movies together, because it's just so magical. And so, you know, the idea that we did that for a few people for the first time and filmed it, I think that was that's another one of those days that you just walk away from your job thinking like, wow, I can't believe we just saw that, you know, super cool moment. And one of the cool things, so let me just share one brief anecdote from that evening. So as we were setting up, my cinematographer, Nikolai, was practicing with the drone. So we have these beautiful kind of drone shots. And so he was just kind of flying around the drone, seeing, you know, whatever. And we were waiting for the sun to go down so we could actually do the screening. And so a lot of people had kind of gathered from the village. And at a certain point, a gentleman comes up. He's maybe about, just maybe about my age, maybe mid-40s or so. And through the translator, he's like looking at the drone. He's like, that up there, are you going to, and then he points to the cameras down here, are you going to show that and then show that like they do on the sports games, like they do in football? And so like, he obviously had no idea how these things were created, but he had noticed that in the television, you know, presentations of sports. And then he had applied that by looking at, you can only assume that these people with these cameras, that's a camera up there too. And so they're going to be cutting. And so I was like, yes, we're going to cut between those. That's exactly what this movie's about. And so I was just so excited to like kind of see the light bulb going off with him as he kind of like worked it out. This is, and so you don't have to know about these things. These things are intuitive. You know what I mean? You can understand them immediately if you kind of have just a little bit of prompting. And that's exactly what took place in Sermon Ildebar's work too. As soon as she explained to them, you know, in a kind of not, she didn't explain to them explicitly, but she helped them. She gave them another piece of information. As soon as she gave them that extra piece of information that allowed them to kind of interpret this in a different way, all of a sudden they're like, oh, you know, I see how that goes. You know, these aren't unrelated images. These are related images. And therefore I need to link them together. Now I see the relationship between that eye line and, you know, the other person that they're looking at, you know? So if you just make that subtle shift in understanding, a lot of things can become manifest, and a lot of things can become understandable. And so, you know, it does speak to the power of these techniques, the fact that they're able to trigger so quickly this kind of response and understanding in us, even in a soccer match. People understand that, you know. So yeah, that was a real kind of awesome moment as well. And then the other moment that we had, it's very brief in the film, was there was a very young woman. She must have been, it's a girl, I would say, old girl. She was maybe 14 or 15. And at a certain point toward the end, when they had set up the bonfire. And so like, basically they set up a bonfire, like, so people are kind of sitting in their seats. And then eventually people, as it got colder, people moved to the bonfire and they continued watching a Turkish language movie. And this young lady was sitting there recording the event with her, she's a villager, she's recording the event with her cell phone. And I was just like, this is a future filmmaker here, you know, she's sitting there, she's documenting this like everybody of her generation does, even though she's in a village where people, you know, even 15, 10 years earlier had never seen movies before, you know, she's sitting there and this is the future. And I thought that was a very beautiful moment as well. And so, you know, we obviously recorded that too. Once I saw that, I was just like, that's too poignant. So yeah, no, that was one of those days. It was pretty cool.
I mean, it's a wonderful film. And it's been great to be able to walk through your filmography. I could talk for hours about your different works and, you know, the different kind of spiraling discussions that could take place from all of them. But it's been a delight. Thank you, Chad, for your time and for your films as well. Like it's, I've been doing this long enough that it's kind of magical when I get to see somebody or talk with somebody who has had an impact on how I see films. And I didn't consciously know it, like until I walked out of the Experimental City and I think I looked it up on IMDb. I didn't actually connect that it was you'd made Jandek. And so I was like, ah, okay, cool. All right, nice. And then when an email comes in, it's like, oh, yeah, I know that guy.
Well, that's really reassuring, because what that says is that, like, I'm making works that resonate with, you know, particular people. And that's nice to hear. You know, the fact that you didn't just go based on like a name, but instead like kind of felt the movie like in a kind of similarly positive way. Like, that means a lot to me, man. I have to say that means a whole lot to hear that. It's very, very reassuring. There's a lot of down in this business, yeah. You know, lot of down, like any for sure, but like there's a lot of rejection, and so you know often begin to kind of, you know, second guess or doubt you know, your direction. And so to hear that, you know, you've responded to some of my films in a positive way, that it's really meaningful. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And you know, I look forward to, again, like in the future, after whatever you got coming up, I'd love to be able to digest it with you in some other way, because it's been a delight to be able to talk with you. I hope you enjoyed the World Expo. It's going to be great.
I hope so too. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. I'm sure. Well, I think maybe the ticketing might be a little bit of a mess, but I think once we actually get in and start experiencing it, I'm sure I'm going to love it. Yeah, it's right in my alley.
So. Yeah, that's good. That part, the ticketing part, you'll deal with that. That's fine. When you're in the flow, you'll enjoy it. Yeah.
Cool. Yes, sir.
No worries. All right. Well, have a lovely day. It's been great to chat. Thank you again. It's a delight.
Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, really. Thanks, man.
Thanks for listening to this chat with Chad Friedrichs. The Cinema Within is available to view in America on Amazon, Apple TV, and Canopy. For other interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. Please rate, review, and share this interview with your film-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'll see you in the next one.